All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, April 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, as you well know if you've been listening. But if those that are tuning in at the end of basketball season for the first time, DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free trial. A free three-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. And the reason it ends up with MLB is because we have optimal lineups for NBA and baseball covered all under one subscription. We don't section it off by provider or by sport. So go and check that out. Baseball off to, and I can't say anything else, but an excellent start to start the season. Also have available members-only chat. So if you want to go in there for your free three-day trial and just go say, hey, how's the crew over at DFSR do? They'll give you their honest opinion. And we think it'll be a positive one. You'll be a long round for the long haul, as many of our members have been. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started. So after a day off in basketball, a random day off, my guess is it was just off because of the NCAA finals. I don't know if they've done that in the past. I don't remember them doing that. But we get a day off on Monday, and now we are back for 13 games on Tuesday, which is kind of, my eyes bulged out a little bit when I saw that there was this many games. And we had a plan to sort of, you know, in the interest of time, to maybe go by position by position or highlight, you know, certain games that have more DFS implications. Were you surprised by how many of these 13 games just have DFS implications, even like this late in the season?
Yeah, we were doing our best to have to focus on fewer of them because there's so damn many of them for the podcast tonight.
We're trying real hard to do less, like just like make it easier, just do a lot less work.
How can we do less? Well, that's the big secret, I guess, about the NBA, or maybe the worst kept secret in some ways, which is the end of the season is just so intensely complicated, just thanks mostly to all the value that crops up, and also trying to read the tea leaves and try to figure out what teams' intentions are in a much different way than it is like in the middle of the season when everyone ostensibly at least has to please their fans and not just sit all their good players. But yeah, it's very complicated. A lot of different teams could, you know, do a lot of different things that would lead to DFS value. So there's a lot to break down.
And I know I promised off the air that I was going to talk less, so we made the podcast shorter, but I'm just going to break that promise in the first 15 seconds here and say one thing I still find crazy is like pleasing the fans. I went and looked at Knicks tickets last night because I was like, oh, you know, I'll catch the Knicks. Maybe me and my daughter can go to a late Knicks game late in the season here because it's the Knicks. They suck. No, you just can't. Like, they're just like, they're still like insanely expensive tickets, even for a team that stinks. I was like, just still surprised. So I guess like, maybe for some teams, pleasing the fans doesn't even matter because they'll just still come and watch the games anyway. But even like the Knicks-Orlando game, you weren't getting a ticket even in the nosebleeds for like less than $100-something, which I just was really surprised about. Anyway, let's get into it. We're going to roll through some of these games. We'll go through, even for 13 games, not a ton of injury stuff hanging out there. Some stuff, and I'm sure things will creep up during the day. There's just too many games for it not to be. Toronto goes in and plays Cleveland. Cleveland -1.5 favorite with a 223 over-under. That 1.5 favorite has to be because the Toronto just doesn't need to win this game at all. It's still a bad matchup for Cleveland because Toronto is such a good defense, but how much do we want to downgrade or at all downgrade maybe some of Toronto's defense late in the season when we know, NBA players are always going to give max effort, but you know, they just don't have any reason to put their best foot forward this late in the season with their playoff seeding basically set. Do we want to make any adjustments for things like that? And if we do, do we want to just start trotting out guys like LeBron?
I mean, maybe. It's a little bit tough to say. Like, I guess the way you could do this would be to just look at points allowed, you know, now versus earlier in the season. And certainly it does appear to paint a picture that's a little bit, you know, that I guess in line with what you're saying. But Toronto in the season, I mean, they've allowed 105 points a game, roughly. It's not that different from what they've been allowing for the last 3 weeks or so. So I guess unless you can look at them and say, you know, that something fundamentally has changed or they're playing certain guys less or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, if those players are out on the court, are they just going to play worse defense because their seeding is secure? I'm just not sure about that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, that's like, it's a kind of an effort. It's not an effort issue in the sense that like NBA players will always put their best effort forward. It's more of like a team. Are they going to play their best rotations? Are they even incentivized to do that? I guess that's really
maybe. But again, on a 13 game slate, is this a defense you're going to target? Like, it's not like the Cavs are just brimming with value that you must play, right? So this actually does feel like a team you can skip.
Vegas, and my only contention there was that this game has the highest over-under of the whole entire slate, and it's supposed to be close. And that's where, if we're worried about safety of certain players, like that's why I'm looking at LeBron. I'm wondering, you know, on a huge day, do we want LeBron? Like, does it make sense to maybe just pencil him in here in a must-win game? I don't know. That's really kind of where I'm landing. Because 223, you know, 112 implied points, it has to be one of the highest that the Raptors have seen all season going into a game. That's the only reason I'm kind of throwing it out.
I mean,
there.
LeBron was great against them when they met 2 weeks ago. So there's certainly precedent to suggest that he can put up a huge total. If you view it as a must win, or more importantly, if they view it as a must win, then you could potentially see that. I guess I don't really see it that same way. Like, what's so must win about this game? I'm just not totally sure. I guess seeding matters, or unless they've come out and said, like, no, we're going to go hard after the 3 seed. But yeah, I don't see them having that same level of urgency. That being said, LeBron's been playing a ton of minutes, so he'll probably get his minutes here. It's just, I don't know. My gut leads me in a different direction than yours, I think, here. I think a lot of people will be on it, and I don't think it's a bad play. It's just, yeah, I'm just feeling a little bit hesitant about just rolling it back out there, assuming that we're going to get the same thing we got 2 weeks ago.
For sure, and I think if you think Kevin Love plays at 36 minutes like he did last game, then he ends up becoming something of a value over on FanDuel. Next game, Brooklyn goes in and plays Philly. Philly's still going to be without Joel Embiid. I guess it looks like through the rest of the regular season, though. I guess they cut that short to around 2 weeks, so that's good news for them. 8.5-point favorites over the Nets. Like Amir Johnson, out of nowhere, he started for him last game. We had looked at Rashawn Holmes, and then Amir Johnson was going to get the start, and then even then it was like Rashawn Holmes could still be counted on. Now Amir Johnson played 31 minutes last game. It took him all 31 to get the value on this. Where do you stand on him? On guys like Ilyasova, also started for Dario Saric. Saric doesn't look like he's going to play today either. Ilyasova in a little bit of foul trouble, I think, which kind of caused him. Where do we want to set the minutes on these guys? Because these guys could come in at tremendous values in a great matchup, and it's like the tale of 2 minutes, because Amir seemed to need all 31 to get there, and Ersan just needs a few more minutes. I don't know. Where do you stand on rostering some of these Philly guys? I know our boy Jerry in the picks that he wrote last night was all over them, as he should have been. But where do you stand on some of these big men minutes in Simmons too for the Sixers?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit less bullish on this power forward situation than maybe some people are, and Jerry in particular. I think Simmons is totally playable on this price point. Maybe even exciting. Like, if you think that the minutes are going to come in higher than they have been, and that's really the question I have to ask myself, because yeah, we've seen him get up to 34 ish minutes. We've seen him do even 37 earlier in the season. I have to think that the Sixers at this point are like not wanting to look to get horse in the mouth with the already seeing like this Embiid situation. Simmons does have some injury history. I have difficulty believing they're just going to leave him in there for 37 minutes or something like that. So I think he'll still get his fair share, and he'll probably still just destroy the Nets tonight. But at 10,000, at least gives me pause. As far as the power forward and center situation, this is another one where I think people are claiming a level of certainty that I'm just not ready to sign up for. I mean, if you look at the last two games, you see some fairly weird game scripts, right? Like, you see them mess around with the starting lineups a little bit. You see, like, the first game where Holmes was, I think, was a 60% start or something like that. That just wound up being Philly winning by 10, and they were up by more than that going into the last quarter. And so, like, I think Holmes was probably slated to play dramatically fewer minutes than that, for instance. But then they're just up by 27 points going into the fourth quarter. What are you supposed to do, right? So I don't think I can draw too much information from that game about their plan. It's important to know that Amir Johnson did play or start in that game and only played 17 minutes, played 30 minutes. I think these guys, again, they fall into that category of guys. Like, Ilyasova in particular seems interesting for me.
Yes.
On such a big slate. But outside of him, like, I don't know. I'm not going to roll the dice with Amir Johnson. Like, he's just the first one on the chopping block. Same thing with Rashawn Holmes. Like, he gets the minutes sometimes. Sometimes he doesn't. 5,200 now? No thanks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Ilyasova is probably the guy I'm most excited about, and he played the least, but he fouled out in 27 minutes last game, and he's a direct comp for Dario. So, like, that is I think the plan for him was to play him like 33, somewhere around 33 minutes, and to lose six of those and sort of still creep up the value. He's the guy at all their price points I think I'm the most interested in, especially with Amir coming up at a 4,600. Atlanta goes in and plays Miami. Atlanta has fully just gone, I mean, they were in full tank mode anyway, but now they're sitting Dennis Schroeder for the rest of the season, so we're not going to see him. Isaiah Taylor has played a lot. And also at times just he was a very popular start, but now he's come up in price. They are 11.5-point underdogs to Miami. Miami's playoff seeding probably set here. They played crazy minutes with James Johnson. Same old story for Miami, where just crazy guys play a lot of minutes. Some guys, the Tyler Johnson. Crazy guys playing a lot of minutes. But the matchup is great here against Atlanta, but they're 11.5-point favorites. Do we think that Miami is still incentivized to continue going crazy with the wins here, or do you think the blowout's a concern? When we're trying to set Miami minutes, do we want to be aggressive because they have a good matchup, or do we want to be sort of bearish because it's just Miami and this can go any which way and it's so hard to tell on a given night?
Yeah, I mean, so Miami now 4 games up on making the playoffs with 5 games to go. So that's really, really tough to for them to not make
I think
the
they care about the
point.
Seeding, though. I think they would much rather play Boston and Toronto. I think that's the only reason that they would still be like, we want to be in the 7 seed, not the 8 seed. Sorry to cut you off, but I think that probably
that's no problem.
Matter.
I'm just saying, I'm just throwing that out there as part of the consideration, because that's, like, I think everyone, yeah, you can care about the seeding, but also, like, not want to push things, I guess, to make it happen. That being said, it seems like they have a plan at this point. It's just, is that plan worth it on the current prices, right? So, like, Dragic, for instance, you know, we played him against Brooklyn. I think it was a good play against Brooklyn. He played 38 minutes against them and scored 27 fantasy points. That includes overtime. But, like, the rotation for him isn't, and the role he's playing on the offense right now isn't necessarily one that facilitates a $6,800 price tag. You can look at a guy like Josh Richardson. He's also playing a lot of minutes right now.
He played a ton that game, yeah.
He did. And then again, that was an overtime game. So, you know, he almost returned value in the best possible matchup, right? And he's on near season high prices. You got James Johnson and Kelly Olynyk, two guys that, you know, were kind of hotly contested or hotly debated in our chat leading into that game. Johnson gets there again on the back of an overtime, and Olynyk doesn't. So, like, $7,200, is that really what you're going to pay for these guys? I don't think so. Like, again, big slates matter. The size of the slate is going to inform what level of value you can play. Just because a guy managed to make your lineup in the best possible matchup last game doesn't mean you have to consider him here at increased prices. So Miami up and down for me. Yeah, there's big tournament upside here. Obviously, the guys do have a pretty elite matchup with Atlanta. But for my cash game purposes, why bother? I just don't. I would be really disappointed to see any of these guys in our final optimal lineups.
I think short of a short slate with Miami, you just simply can't trust their minutes. There's no, I'm totally with you. You cannot go out on a limb in a cash game at these prices just because they're the number one contenders to lose minutes, and it just doesn't matter who the guy is. I want to amend one thing that I said before about Toronto. I thought they were farther up in the standings than they were on Boston. They're only 2 games up against Boston. Boston's won 6 in a row, even without Kyrie. So that number one seed for Toronto is not as safe as I thought it was. Orlando goes in and plays the Knicks, a game that, you know, when we were looking at possible games to skip, you're like, oh, when the two bad teams play each other, we can think about just maybe skipping them overall. But then that doesn't end up being the case with these teams, as they still have really fantasy viable guys. Orlando has guys like Vooch and Aaron Gordon, and then even DJ Augustine. And then the Knicks looks like they're going to be without Enes Kanter again. So you get guys like Kyle O'Quinn. Trey Burke's been amazing. Michael Beasley is questionable, but when he plays, I mean, this game, two bad teams, and seems like there's a lot of pretty fantasy viable guys that guys going in them. Who do you think you'd want to consider here?
Yeah, so I think the Knicks guys make sense to me in a game that rates to be close. Like guys like Trey Burke, the usage and the minutes have been pretty consistent. Again, don't pay no attention to the 2 games in the last 4 where he played only 27 minutes. Because he actually did almost kind of get there on these prices even in that game. But yeah, against a fast-paced matchup with Orlando, coming off a 15-assist performance, like, I just think that he's the focal point of the offense right now, and nobody in New York cares enough to stand in his way. I also think Kyle O'Quinn still very affordably priced. You're going to need really definitive news on Kanter, which I don't believe is out as of this recording.
He's doubtful, and I don't think he's going to play, and it's an early game.
I don't think he's going to play either. Yeah. And I hope that we do know. But 15 boards against Detroit, didn't do a whole lot offensively. I don't think that you can count on that level of rebounding production. But, I mean, look at the guys. Let's see here. Against Chicago, 9 rebounds in 22 minutes. Charlotte, 9 rebounds in 17 minutes. Against Philly, 10 rebounds in 24 minutes. This guy really is sort of a rebounding machine. If you're going to get 31-plus minutes on his current prices, I think that the rebounds are enough floor that you can run him in cash games without any guilt at all. So definitely looking at O'Quinn and Burke. Outside of him, I don't think there are other Knicks that I'm going to be too excited about. Beasley is a guy that, you know, Jerry wrote up in our picks article last night, questionable with an illness. He's been really good on these prices recently, but that might be enough to steer him away on, you know, again, an all-time, or at least a season high price for him.
And to be fair to Jerry, we suggest to Jerry who he writes up. So it's I don't want to think that Jerry's getting put on a limb here.
I'm not trying to put him on a limb. I'm just mostly saying if you read the Pix article, you might be confused. You and Jerry combined to write up Beasley last night or whatever. But nonetheless, again, 13 game slate, paying 7,100. I just want news. You know, all I want is to not on a game on a slate this size. I just don't need to take any risks, right? I'm picking between all the players in the NBA. I only need two guys per position. Why should I pick a guy with question marks unless it's just like one of those slam dunk, absolute must sort of plays? And I just don't see Beasley on that level.
Yep, and I do see O'Quinn on that level if Kanter is out. Beasley's a guy our system wants to play sometimes at like 19 minutes on DraftKings just because he just gets there easily on the points per minute stuff. So right. If Kanter's not in there, I think he's 100% cash game play for me across the board, even with the prices having come up over the couple days rest that the algorithm had the chance to just kind of swap in there. Charlotte goes in and plays the Bulls. This game's close to a skip, I think, for me, but not a ton of injury news. Charlotte's still playing guys like Walker minutes. Jeremy Lamb's going to come back, which kind of cuts down on some of the small forward shooting guard minutes that have been coming for some of the other guys. By the way, George Hill was just ruled out again, so that's going to probably fiddle around with the Cavs lineup. I guess Jose Calderon's going to be going to start anyway. Charlotte Bulls are just Dunn and Levine are now out for the season. It doesn't really change anything. They've been out for a while, and they're still just kind of not playing their guys enough minutes. Does this game come as close to a skip on this slate as really any that we've talked about or might talk about?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see a ton of value like in terms of just new opportunity coming off on this game. The Bulls are a bad team, but they also play kind of slow. And Charlotte, you know, we've talked about this many times, but they're just sort of efficiently priced at this point. Guys like Walker, Batum, Howard, you know, the actual guys that you're going to consider for DFS purposes, like they just have played very consistent minutes throughout the entire season. So why target them here? I don't know. Yeah, huge slate. Again, I hate to offer that caveat all the time, but I think it really is a material thing. You just don't need to play someone for every single game.
Washington goes in and plays Houston. I'm wondering your opinion here. Houston, I kind of don't get what they're doing. Like, their playoff seeding is basically set. They're six games up on the Warriors, and the Warriors are without Curry. Now, the Warriors have still been playing fine-ish, I guess, without him. But six games up, they're not going to be caught. And yet, like guys like Harden still playing like 36 minutes a game as they get ready for the playoffs.
They mathematically can't be caught, right?
I didn't look and see if they had. Oh yeah, right. So they're set. And yet Harden goes out and plays 36 minutes last game in a game that was kind of in hand too. Like I don't really understand. I guess my point was I had trouble setting what his minutes were because it seems like he should be playing 32 minutes as they just kind of keep him, you know, well rested for the playoffs. And yet,
you're driving your car around on the winter ones.
Well, no one else played more than 30, and then the guy that they need to play the most played 36. Like, where do we want to set these Houston minutes? Because I was really confused. Let's assume Chris Paul sits. Harden looks like a very good play on paper here in a game that's supposed to stay close, and yet I can't imagine a scenario why they would play him 29 minutes, more than 29, 30 minutes, and yet they did last game.
Yeah, you don't play these guys tonight is the answer, I think. I think you set the minutes very conservatively, understanding that, you know, you and I talk about this when it comes to like playing backups or just when we're like often internally, one of the things we just talk about most is how many minutes a given basketball player is going to play for whatever reason. That's something we spend a lot of time talking about. And a point you've made many, many times in the past is what can happen that's going to get the guy even more minutes than this, right? Because at the end of the season, we take someone's average and we look and say, hey, this guy played 36 minutes a game. Well, in reality, sometimes he played 42 minutes a game, sometimes he played 26. In a game like this, given that the Rockets are locked up, so much more can happen that would make Harden lose minutes than would make him gain minutes, right? Short of overtime, and even then, I would have my questions as to whether he could get back to early season, like peak level minutes. I think you're so much more likely to see like the 30 and 29 minutes he played against Atlanta and New Orleans, played 40 against Detroit, but then 32 against Portland. Like we see that this is more often the plan than not. And with so many great big money payoffs tonight and an only fine matchup against Washington, I just don't want to play Harden. And furthermore, I don't want to play any of these other guys unless we get definitive news that's going to create opportunity for someone specifically who won't matter for their playoff push.
John Wall came back two games ago. He played the front end of a back-to-back, and the Wizards, I'll never understand what the Wizards' plan is, because they're like, well, John Wall, no minutes limit. That was it's like after the knee issue. the note with him was he's been gone like, a month, 2 months. He's been gone a long time. And then they were just like, no minutes limit on this guy last night. And they're like, we'll talk about a team that never learns its lesson with this stuff. Like they did this with Bradley Beal, where they just played him crazy minutes, and he was always hurt early in this. And now they're actually running hot probably on his injury issues. And then they just lose Wall. And they're like, yeah, dude, Let him out. Let that Porsche out of. Let's let this Porsche out of the thing. Like, just, I know it's been sitting around since the spring. Tried to gun it up to 100 on the, out on the highway. It doesn't make any sense. They probably need to win. They would probably like to keep winning, and yet I have trouble trusting their overall minutes. It's not a terrible matchup against Houston because they play at a pretty fast pace. Do we want to target any of those guys?
Yeah, I think Wall's somewhat interesting here. If you really think he's going to go up and play like 35 minutes in a close game, then I think that you can actually run him out here kind of almost with reckless abandon. Like $8,000 is a really, really cheap price for a guy who, you know, was priced almost at $10,000 earlier in the season. And we saw that for whatever's going on with the knee and all that kind of thing, he was good. He was really, really good on a per minute basis when he was out there for his first game back. So yeah, I think he's totally playable there. I think, again, outside of Wall, you know, Markieff is a guy our system has flirted with from time to time. You know, he was only okay against Chicago, you know, obviously lost minutes in the Charlotte game. The other guys, though, Beal, you know, Otto Porter, even Gortat to a lesser extent, like, these guys are all seeing, I think, inflated prices from Wall not being around. Yep. And while Wall was distributing very, very heavily before he returned, he's just, distributing very heavily in the game he was back, he's just going to have the ball in his hands so much that I have to think it means a slight downgrade across the board. And again, on a big slate, not good enough.
OKC hosting the Warriors in the 8 o'clock games. OKC a -4.5 favorite. Warriors, not a ton to play for here. They have some, looks like Durant and Thompson are going to play. If we take anything from last game, which was a close one, neither guy played more than 35 minutes. They're both good. They got Phoenix. I can't imagine the Warriors are going to go out on a limb with either of these guys, which was why part of the reason you see OKC as a 4.5-point favorite. But OKC is not in the same situation. They need to keep winning. They're currently in fifth, but that gets jockeyed around with every win or a loss. Westbrook is a guy that's coming into our system as possibly the top big money payoff on the entire slate. He's the most expensive guy coming into lineups right now. Do you see him as close to, I don't want to say it a lock, but is of all the expensive guys, like between him and LeBron, a couple other guys that we have here, do you see his floor as being just as high as any of them? And is he a guy that maybe we want to build cash games around?
Yeah, I love Westbrook tonight. I think the super fast-paced matchup with Golden State is nothing but a positive here. I haven't been very impressed with Quinn Cook's defense in terms of like the early returns there. Maybe they try to stick Klay Thompson on him to some degree, but that just opens up gaps in the defense elsewhere, so who knows how much that will really happen. And again, Golden State's not really playing for anything, so like, what's their big plan to like stick guys in front of Westbrook so they can maintain what they already just definitely the two seed? So it just makes no sense. Oklahoma City, meanwhile, certainly does have something to play for here. They're trying to lock up one round of home court advantage in what will likely be a first round matchup with San Antonio. Feels like that must be significant for them on some level. So yeah, I think Westbrook, and again, judging by their behavior recently, they're both seem incentivized to leave him on the court for plenty of time. The fewest minutes he's played in the foreseeable past, geez, since March 8th, was 35 minutes in a game. He seems to have the highest floor and just as high a ceiling as anyone of any of the big money guys for me.
Yeah, and I don't mind stacking him with Paul George here. George is another guy.
Paul George, too.
Playing huge minutes, 38, 39, 40 minutes a game. They have consolidated the rotations as they just need to make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs, and maybe they're a little worried about seeding. I don't mind stacking those two guys together, especially because some of these, if you don't play LeBron and Westbrook together, I think that playing Westbrook and George together is probably the plan, just considering some of the other cheap playoffs. And I think we do have a bunch of mid-tier value as well out there. Last 8 o'clock game, Boston goes in and plays Milwaukee. Like I've said, Boston has won 6 games in a row, can probably sort of maybe feel that the East, first in the East, is there for them. Milwaukee's playoff seeding, they're in the playoffs, and they're probably just jockeying around for just over where they're going to land. Giannis is a guy, didn't play a ton of minutes last game. They've consolidated some of their rotations. Jabari Parker has played a lot. And then Boston, you get Terry Rozier, because they're going to be without Shane Larkin again. Are we still buying on a guy like Rozier? He's been really good fantasy-wise. And for my money, it's like the only guy that you can kind of trust from a fantasy perspective right now on Boston, just with some of the minutes. Played 37 last game, took 17 shots. Do you think he is cash game viable, sort of in that like Trey Burke range of pricing?
Yeah, he's viable. Kind of unexciting to me. I think I'd rather play Burke, honestly. Just a faster-paced matchup, a better matchup. Rozier did play the 37 minutes. That was an uptick. That was in a very, you know, a very, very significant game against Toronto, and that, you know, they both really wanted to win, as it would just be worth two games in the standings, because, you know, they would get a win and Toronto would get a loss. But also because the game is just more likely to stay close, right? So going up against the Milwaukee team with a little bit less to play for, not quite as good a team, I don't think Rozier's mandatory. I mean, he also tweaked his ankle a little bit. It looks like he's going to play. So, if he shows up in your lineups, I think you can roll him out there and, you know, not feel too bad about it. But I just don't think you need to force him.
Before we get to the rest of these games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor doing a great job once again providing MLB and NBA contests right now. They're running their season-long home run derby contest, which you can still take part in. You can follow a link from our site, or you can head over to FantasyFactor.com, and it's still being promoted over there. Fantasy Factor is also just a great place. I mean, baseball has been tremendous for us early this season, and I'm sure we'll do our baseball podcast in a little bit here, but they're a great place for baseball contests as well because, again, you just don't see sharks entering hundreds of lineups in to the various contests there. Great place to play if you're a more casual player or you want to play, more importantly, against casual players. So check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
As close to a skip as we're going to get on this slate, Portland goes in and plays Dallas, 8.5-point favorites. Portland, I'm still worried about playoff seeding, but this matchup is really slow and bad, and Dallas, like, forget about it. They're not doing, except for Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes has seen some minutes, and I guess if there was a couple guys injured and sitting out, we could take a look at some of their role players, and even then, Portland's such a bad matchup. Is this? I'm prepared to say skip, but I don't know if you see something I don't.
Go, buddy. You got to make the host's call, the executive decision, as you like to say, and just call it a skip, because that's what this is. There's no reason to go deep here at all.
Yeah, like when I tried to make an executive decision the other day, and you were just harping on the fact that I wasn't an executive and you were the executive, so then I was making some other kind of executive.
Right.
I was making some other kind of decision, but it certainly wasn't an executive decision.
No, well, how can that just makes no sense? Like, you can't make. I guess because you have executive functioning, like, because you're kind of the boss of yourself. I don't know. But yeah, it was a very bizarre use of terms. It'd be very, very strange. Like, it'd be like if just one of the guys in McDonald's walking around flipping burgers, like, I'm making an executive decision. So everyone's like, huh?
Perfect comp. That was exactly the comp I was looking for. Indiana goes in and plays Denver. Denver still on the outside looking in. We've talked about this, but they're still only a game back from the Pelicans right now. Pelicans all of a sudden have lost four in a row. Nuggets have won two. They are now only a game back in the loss column of the playoffs. Absolute must win game for the Nuggets. 3.5-point favorites at home, where obviously historically they've been much better, thanks in large part probably to the altitude. But 28-10, best home record, second best home record in basketball this year, 28-10. Where do we stand with some of these Nuggets guys? Wilson Chandler, questionable. Gary Harris is out again for this game. They have played their start, specifically Jokic, Murray, and Will Barton. They played them minutes. They started Torrey Craig last game for Chandler, even though Devin Harris seemed like he was going to be the payoff. Do we want to kind of think about stacking this game? Oladipo is another guy showing up in our system, going the other way against a lackluster Nuggets defense. Could you see this game as a cash game stack going both ways?
I think so. I mean, Denver in particular, they have absolutely everything to play for right now. It would be colossally disappointing for them to miss the playoffs after coming this close, I think. Especially, they kind of looked like they were out of it, but now with the Pelicans dropping four straight and them winning two straight, they're just a game back. So they're going to throw everything at this game. Jokic has been excellent recently on these prices, just going max effort, crashing the boards, playing 40-plus minutes per game. You already mentioned Murray and Barton both playing tons of minutes as well. I think you have to take a really hard look here. The nice thing as well is just a terrific matchup with the Pacers. Well, actually, one guy I didn't even mention so far, which we probably should highlight even more specifically, is Millsap. The guy's 7,100 right now, 49 and 51 fantasy points in each of his last two games because they've finally stretched him out and are allowing him to play 39 minutes a game. So, yeah, from top to bottom, this is just a terrific game to stack.
Yeah, Indiana has slowed their pace down in the second half of the season. I heard that on a podcast the other day, but it's still a good matchup. And Denver still in a spot where whenever we can get almost near certainty around starters' minutes, that is really the name of the game here. And Denver strikes me at this point. I'm not even worried if we have the Chandler news or not. Like, that's not going to really affect the other guys that we just mentioned, specifically the two bigs. So definitely a game you want to target. And like I said, I think you can consider a guy like Oladipo. The minutes have been there. The fantasy production has not completely been there, just for losing some of those numbers that he was crazy on the beginning of the season, specifically some of the defensive stuff. But I think he's still coming at something of a value. Sub 89. Might feel a little weird to play him, but definitely a guy
that's close for me. He's an upside play for me. I mean, he scored 69 fantasy points against LA. Prior to that, though, you know, you got to really just hope you hit value. I'm looking at one game at 5x on this price since March 4th. So that's a full month, two games where he hits value, one game where he went completely off. But other than that, nah, I'm not super into Oladipo here.
We get into the next 9 o'clock game. The Lakers go in and play Utah. Lakers a little banged up. They're going to be without Lonzo Ball again. Brandon Ingram, well, Ball's doubtful. And it looks like they're going to be without Brandon Ingram again. They played those starters a lot of minutes, and yet this matchup looks so bad. The Lakers have a guy, the guys, we've played these guys a ton over the last month. They've been one of the easiest plays to make just because their minutes have been so crazy. And I'm wondering now if we're just getting to a point where the prices on them and the matchup with Utah specifically has it so that this might be the a chance for us to avoid. And then what do you think about the Utah going the other way in what should be a high-paced matchup against the Lakers?
Yeah, so start with the Lakers. The only guy I'm really looking at here is Kyle Kuzma, 46 and 39 minutes in each of the last two. As he said, Ingram's already slated to miss here. I know he didn't get there against Sacramento, and I know this is not a great matchup with Utah, but it's just the wrong price. $6,500 is too cheap for him. He's more like a $7,000 player, and I think he's still a cash game consideration here in spite of all of the bad factors working against him. Now, he might be on the outside looking in when it's all said and done, but not a guy I would be devastated to have in there. As for the Utah guys, yeah, you're getting a big-time plus matchup here. You know, obviously the Lakers still playing one of the fastest paces in the league, flirting with the very fastest, depending on the night that you're looking at. But I'm still, you know, like as I go player by player here, I'm not overwhelmed by the value I'm seeing, right? So like Rubio at 8,000, he pretty much has been getting there, but sometimes just doesn't on a very competitive slate. Is he a guy I really want in cash games? Probably not. Favors, you know, the minutes have been up a little bit recently, playing around 31. We also know he's the first guy on the chopping block if the game were to get out of hand. Gobert was flirting with 39, 40 minutes. That's come down to 28 to 32 in spite of other people continuing to play their minutes, so that looks troubling to me. I think it's just one of those situations where, in spite of a really, really good matchup, Utah is just such a weird team for DFS purposes that it just doesn't quite get there for me.
Yep, I agree, and I'm a little worried about the blot. Like you said, 10.5 point favorites here, so that's
there's a lot of things just kind of tickling my spidey sense here, Doug.
Well, that's good to know. Kings go in and play Phoenix. Game doesn't have there's no line right now. Don't know why Vegas can't set a line in this game. So easy to figure out these two teams. So they just can't seem to. They set the over under, so they're like they're going to score around this many points. But who's going to win? Who's going to lose? I mean, who the hell knows, right? And who, by the way, and who the hell cares really too? Kings. We've been at it all season long with them. When certain guys sit, you can consider them. And when, other than that, especially considering that they start at 10 o'clock at night, Eastern time, 3 hours after lock, nearly an impossible team to target, maybe outside of Bogdanovich, who just at least plays and that doesn't even always hit his minutes. And then on the Phoenix side, they're going to be without TJ Warren again. They are Devin Booker is doubtful. I cannot think of a reason why they would want to play. No, actually he's moved up to questionable. I don't know why they'd even just consider playing him at this point, like just sit him out, but I get maybe that he's fighting for that. He's questionable. Basically every single relevant guy in this game is questionable. Peyton, Len, Booker, Dudley, well Dudley's not, Scott Labissiere, Zebo, every single person's questionable. What do we do with this game? It seems like we should want to target guys like maybe like Ulis, maybe the Josh Jackson, and yet I'm just too worried that a guy like Booker just randomly plays.
Yeah, we want news for sure. Those guys have missed. I think Booker, Jerry wrote this up actually, a quite nice write-up for last night too. But Booker's missed 8 games now. Warren's missed 7. There's some speculation that these guys might even just be getting shut down for the season, which doesn't seem out of the question for me. So I think you can consider those guys. I don't think you need to stretch though. Like I think we've been getting news somewhat early on these plays. If there was no news or if they're actually talking game time decision around lock, you definitely don't want to be the one sticking your neck out there. As soon as you do hear a word, these guys are 100% in play. Jackson, you know, he's been a very, very popular play since he's had this role. He hasn't been like destroying these prices, but seems very safe, like pretty high floor in some not so great matchups. I mean, 40 fantasy points against Golden State, get 37 against Houston, huge blowout concern games, 36 against Boston. Like they've kind of had a murderer's row of opponents, and it hasn't mattered for Jackson. He's been out there. So I would like him very much if we got definitive news. And then the guy on the Kings side, which I think is still just day in, day out, a great play, and the price hasn't moved at all, is Bogdan Bogdanovich. It seems like the algorithms just forgot about this guy completely. But in reasonable games, he can play as many as 39 minutes. So, 5x and then some, 5x to 7 and 8x in the last three games. Seems like a really strong play and completely part of the plan right now in Sacramento.
Yeah, 39 minutes last game has got to be the most any Kings played all season long. So I can't even imagine it's close. It's got to be like 1.5 times more than anyone that's ever played. So that's what at least it feels like. Final game on the slate, 10:30. Spurs go in and play the Clippers. Spurs 1.5-point favorite. Something of a leverage game, and still sort of feels like it could be just a slower matchup. Aldridge is getting up there in price. They've moved their starting lineup around at times. Like, Gasol has started and then moved back to the bench. And it's not like you get a Gasol, like, Joffrey LeBronway switch. You get Gasol or Danny Green going to switch. Like, it just depends on who they want to start at the five, or they want to go small.
Yeah, they just don't care.
Yeah, so this is a game I actually think we could see Gasol play just because of DeAndre, and I'm still just not totally sure because Popovich thinks about these matchups. What do you want to do with this game at all? Got a couple of these Clipper guys, Tobias Harris, Tyrone Wallace, and Austin Rivers all playing a lot of minutes, and the matchup still seems bad on paper.
Yeah, I think the matchup is bad enough on paper that you can probably pretty safely ignore it. The one thing that this game has in its favor, maybe for big tournaments, Clippers absolutely playing for their lives right now. They're going to leave everyone on the court for every last minute that they possibly can. And if you think that the Spurs production gets consolidated into the hands of someone like Aldridge, who's been excellent in the last couple games, you know, you could see a game where you might want to stack three or maybe four guys in a game that no one is going to be stacking, by the way. So I think you can get there on that. Harris, it's a really, really nice price on him at 7,100. Just the matchup is so bad. I think I'm going to look forward to their next matchup a little bit more than I am on this one.
All right, I think we covered it here on a pretty about as full as a Tuesday NBA as you'll ever see. 13 games on the slate, tons of news and notes that we're going to be waiting for as the day goes on. Going to be a lot of value. This one doesn't seem as up in the air as some of the other late season slates. Maybe it's just because we have enough teams playing that we don't need to totally worry about some of the pieces of information. DFSR.com/MLB will get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system, and then still have MLB early bird pricing at $29.95 a month. So go check that out. Go check out our baseball podcast, which we are going to hopefully record after we record this one. In minimum, we'll be recording that more as the NBA season winds down. It's just we get into a little bit of a time crunch with having to do both. So go check that out. You can check out the DFSR.com, DFSR MLB podcast feed over on iTunes as well. Buddy, back again tomorrow talking more basketball.
Deuces.